I'm so happy to get to be with you all today. I have been asked to come here from the seminary in Columbus, Ohio, to preach a stewardship sermon. That is to talk about money, about giving our money away. I'm going to do that. But I do so knowing full well that stewardship sermons are not always, you know, the most popular sermons. So I'm going to try to make it pretty easy on you. I decided I'm just going to tell you some stories this morning. I've picked three stories that I think illustrate things that the Bible wants to say to us about our money and about giving our money away. Three stories that make points in a fairly memorable way, and I'm just going to share those with you today. The first I call the story of the baptism of the Gauls. And this is like a historical tale, but it's not accurate history. It's some kind of a medieval urban legend, I imagine. The Gauls were actual historical people. They lived in the area that's now France and Belgium. And at the time of the Roman Empire, they had been conquered by the Romans. They never did take too well to being conquered, and we hear of numerous Gallic uprisings. Anyway, as the story goes, some Christian missionaries ventured into this hostile territory, and some of the Gauls became Christians. But when the missionaries would baptize them in a river or a stream, they had a peculiar custom. They would go under the water with one arm sticking straight up in the air like that. And the missionaries thought that was odd, and they soon learned the reason for it. The next time a battle or a skirmish broke out, this warrior could say, "Disarmed is not baptized," because this was the arm with which he wielded his sword or axe or whatever it was. And so he could now ride off to slay his enemy with his unbaptized arm. So the story goes. I think it's a good illustration for talking about why we look at stewardship in the church. I do know that stewardship is sometimes, people think it's just kind of a fancy word for fundraising, but it's so much more than that. Stewardship, I say, is about getting completely wet. It is about being stewards of all that God entrusts to us. And that means looking very carefully at ourselves and discovering what it is that we want to keep free from the influence of our faith, what we want to take away from the waters of baptism. And discovering what that is, and then just immersing it. Stewardship can be about lots of things. We talk about stewardship of our time, of our talents, of our families, of our planet. We talk about all sorts of things. But I have noticed in the church that when we talk about stewardship, it seems like we almost always end up talking about money. And I think I know why. I think the reason is because for many people in modern day America today, money is the number one thing that we want to keep dry. I picture modern American Christians going under the river with that outstretched arm sticking up out of the water, clutching not a sword or a battle axe, but their wallet, their pocketbook, their credit cards, their stock portfolio. Our money is the one thing that we seem inclined to just kind of push over here and keep free from the influence of our faith and our religion. But none of us really want to do that. So when we talk about stewardship, we call each other on it. And we say, let's get completely wet. Let's take whatever it is that we would keep free from the influence of our baptism and bring it back into the realm of what it means to be people who belong to God. The next story I tell is one that just illustrates what a steward is. And, you know, the word used to be, back in King James English, it was a very common word in English, but you know, people don't use the word so much anymore, and we don't even know what it means, maybe. A steward, very simply, is a person who lives in a place that does not belong to them, and they get to use things that aren't theirs, but they're expected to take care of the things that they're allowed to use. So my wife and I, we have 5 cats, and we like to travel. So when we travel, we want to have somebody look after the house, but we have to have somebody look after the cats. So we find somebody to come and do that. Usually what we do is we get a college student, because you see, we live in a very nice middle-class home filled with all kinds of very nice middle-class things. And this college student lives in a cramped dorm room and has an annoying roommate. And so we say, hey, you want to come live in our house for 2 weeks? Cook in our kitchen and watch our big screen TV and, you know, and just pretend you're the owner of a middle-class home for a couple of weeks. It's an upgrade. It's a pretty good deal if you're not allergic. That person is what the Bible would call a steward, living in our home, using all our stuff, and we hope taking good care of it. Jesus tells stewardship parables in the Bible. The person goes on a journey and leaves the stewards in charge of the vineyard or the farm or the, you know, whatever it is. And usually the point of the story is when the person comes home, have the people been good stewards or have they been bad stewards? So thus far, the college students have always been good stewards for us. If we come back one day and find that the student threw wild parties in the house and broke all our china and spilled wine on the carpet and left the poor kitty cats to fend for themselves, that would be what the Bible calls a bad steward. So that's one of the points that we get from these stories Jesus tells. It's an obvious point. Those parables pretty much just preach themselves. We can ask ourselves, we know that we are stewards of all that God has made. Everything belongs to God. We are stewards of this planet, of our families, of our bodies, of our time, talents, and treasures. Are we doing a good job of taking care of what God has entrusted to us? Or do we maybe need to do a better job of taking care of what God has entrusted to us? And you know, the answer is usually obvious. That's one point that the stories make. What I want to tell you, though, is that it's not actually the main point. It's just one point. The main point is something else. To get the main point, you have to imagine, what if my wife and I came back from our travels to discover that the student had changed the locks on the doors and now said, "This is my house. I live here. All this stuff belongs to me." Do you get that that would be a problem on a completely different order? And that, Jesus says, is the fundamental problem with humanity. It's not just a question of whether human beings are doing a good job or a bad job. The real problem is that human beings, well, we bring nothing into this world, and we take nothing out. While we are here, somehow we get the idea that it's all ours. We think we're owners. We don't realize everything belongs to God. The fundamental problem, Jesus says, isn't just whether we're good stewards or bad stewards. It's that we don't know we're stewards, period. We think everything is ours to do with as we please. So when this time of the year comes around, or when we talk about stewardship in the church, perhaps the most important thing we want to say to each other over and over again, in case we forgot since the last time it came up, is everything we are, everything we have, belongs to God. A gracious trust. God lets us use all these things wonderfully, but they're not ours. Everything is God's. All that we have is thine alone. A trust, O Lord, from thee. One more story. And this one is about giving to the church. Because, hey, you knew I'd get there eventually. A Pentecostal pastor told me this story, and I love it. He says, giving to the church is both a duty and a delight. It's something we ought to do, but ideally it's also something that we will want to do, that we will love to do. And here's a story to drive that home. He said, I grew up in a small town, and when I was 8 years old, my mother sent me to the florist shop to get some flowers for the dining room table, because, you know, we're going to have company for dinner. She gave me some money, and I walked over a few blocks away over to the florist. I bought some flowers and took them back to the house. But as I was going home, I'm walking down the streets carrying these flowers, and I still remember being worried that some of my friends might see me walking down the street carrying a bouquet of flowers, and they'd tease me or make fun of me, and maybe I'd look like a sissy because I'm carrying flowers, or they'd just go, "Where'd you get the flowers?" or something. I get it, because it does not take a great deal to make an 8-year-old boy feel self-conscious. I get it. But he says, the point is, I did it. I did it because my mother asked me to, and I was an obedient child. It was the right thing to do. I didn't want to get those flowers and bring them to our house, but I did it anyway because it was the right thing to do. And now as an adult, I find sometimes that's exactly what it's like giving to the church. I don't particularly want to do it. I don't get excited about doing it, but it's the right thing to do. It's just the right thing to do. It is my duty. I want to be a responsible member of the congregation, do my fair share to support the church I've decided to be a part of. It's the right thing to do. And that's all there is to it. But that's not all there is to it, because the story goes on. He says, 10 years later, I still lived in that same town. And you know what? Now I wasn't 8 years old. I was 18 years old. And I was in love with a young woman who lived in that town. And you know what I did? I saved up some of my money, and I went to that same florist shop, and I bought her flowers. And as I was carrying them to her house, I had this little deja vu moment in the back of my head, that I'm walking down some of the same streets, carrying the bouquet of flowers, exactly like I did 10 years ago. It's the same thing, but it wasn't the same thing at all. Because this time, I wasn't worrying about what somebody might think if they saw me, or I wasn't looking this way or that, or, yeah. I was only thinking about two things: how happy she would be to get flowers, and how fortunate I was to be the one bringing them to her. And that, this pastor told me, is what giving out of sheer delight can mean. And sometimes giving to the church can be that. Not just doing our duty, but giving out of hearts filled with love and worship for the God who is so good to us. And that would be my hope and prayer for all of you. First, that you just do the right thing, support your congregation in ways that are responsible and appropriate, because it's our duty to do that. But more, fall in love with this God who is so good to us. And when you bring your gifts and your offerings to this church, I would hope that you could do so thinking of two things: how happy God is to receive anything that we are willing and able to give. And, friends, never, ever forget this: how fortunate we are to be the people making these offerings. Amen.